Can you speak into the microphone, Dr. Campbell? It's hard to hear.
This is Simon here. I actually can't hear anything on my end.
Dr. Campbell, I can't hear anything.
Hi, this is Heather in the board office. Is anybody able to hear me on that's on the line?
I can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay. So we maybe just be, it may be our microphones that we're having difficulty with. So if you could just be patient for one more minute. I apologize for this.
Okay. This is Dr. Yeah, Campbell. Can you hear me now, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We were, it was just some mic issues. Okay, so we've called the meeting to order. Roll call. We've gone through here. Live here, too. We have Mr. Crawford. Crawford is present. Mandy Parvis. Welcome. We have met you before. Thanks for being here. And then I don't know, do we have any of the other doctors on the phone, like Dr. Friedlander or Dr. Glessinger or Dr. Clark?
I'm April Glessinger. I'm here.
That, Dr. Glessinger?
Are you? Yes.
Okay. Dr. Friedlander, are you there yet?
I am here.
Okay.
Good morning.
And how about Dr. Clark? Dr. Rosales, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, so it seems like we have everybody on the line. So does anyone have any declaration of conflict of interest on any of the agenda items? Okay, hearing none. And I will just remind everybody that this is a professional board meeting and that any aberrant behavior won't be tolerated, and we can always ask you to leave the meeting. So we're going to move now down to number six. This is a review discussion of possible action regarding the ratification of a non-disciplinary consent agreement for continuing education and resolution of complaint number 21-03-C, which is Dr. Seth Clark. And Mr. Crawford is counsel who represented in this case. We had our settlement conference and an agreement was reached. My board members should have had a copy to review. So what we'll be doing here is voting to ratify this consent agreement. Mr. Clark, do you have anything you need to say in remarks?
Mr. Crawford?
Mr. Crawford. Well, it starts with a C.
There you go. It's close enough. No, not unless anybody who didn't attend the settlement conference has any questions. We've agreed to it. Dr. Clark and I have both signed it, so.
Great. Gentlemen, do you all have any questions on this consent agreement? Hearing.
I don't.
Pardon?
No.
No, thank you. Okay, so since everything seems to be set, I will go ahead and make a motion to ratify the consent agreement and order for non-disciplinary CME on board case 21-03-C. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
Okay, we're going to do a voice vote on this. So, Dr. Yolano?
Second.
We have a second. We're voting on this now. So we're doing a voice vote. So Dr. Yolano?
Yay.
Dr. Foreman?
Aye.
Dr. Campbell? Aye. Passed unanimously, and thank you very much. That concludes that matter. All right. Now we're going to move on back to item 5, we're under investigation files. I'm going to go ahead and take number 4, which is complaint number 21-22-C, Dr. Seth Clark. Council is present. Second. And it's Mandy Carvis. The review was done on this case by Dr. Saunders, the investigator. So we will go ahead and hear from Dr. Saunders. And Dr. Saunders, just as a reminder, if you can speak slowly, because we get that back noise, and sometimes it's a little hard to hear everything that you need. Appreciate that.
Look, sure, will do.
Now, did the internet go back off again, Heather? Love tech.
I'm on by telephone.
Okay, so you're fine. And Dr. Yolano and Dr. Foreman, can you hear Dr. Saunders?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so.
All right. Dr. I'll try and slow this down for you guys. Sure, this is regarding, complaint number 2122C. The complaint is by patient SB. And the patient had two concerns. One is that she did not feel like she got a thorough examination. And then she received a copy of some notes, and she did not agree with what was recorded on the notes that she received. I had a further discussion with the patient on the phone regarding the concerns, and she felt like the medical chart that she received was inadequate. Based on the progress note that she received, she didn't agree with what was written on the notes. And her biggest concern is that she didn't want that as part of her medical record or legacy. She also had concerns that she didn't like her discussion regarding her problems and the rationale for the procedures that were chosen to be done. She's still upset regarding the matter, doesn't feel she had some closure. According to the written response with Dr. Clark, is that the staff inadvertently provided the patient a copy of an incomplete note that was not finalized by Dr. Clark, and that accounts for some of the inadequacies that were used typically by some templates. I did suggest to the patient also that she would do better by getting a copy of an official note. Dr. Clark, sorry, you can hear me, correct?
Yes, I'm here now.
Someone is, it's not on my end, but someone's in the background. I'll continue. Dr. Clark explained the confusion regarding his staff inadvertently provided a copy of the note. He believes that he did a thorough examination, provided a good plan of care, and then during the procedures, patient received a biopsy, and the doctor related that he did the nail biopsy as a courtesy to the patient for her care and troubles. I did do some further questions regarding this biopsy that was performed during the procedure. There was some concern that Dr. Clark does have an in-house pathology unit. He relates that it was a courtesy and that there was no billing of professional or technical fees. That was of consequence because the patient was uncertain as to why she was receiving the biopsy, and communication was a little unclear. When I reviewed the medical records, the patient was just seen one time. And there are two different notes that I've received through the communication. One is an encounter preview, which was a copy of what the patient received. And then there was a signed, more formal, complete medical record note. There are some obvious differences. There were some templates that were used with the encounter form that the patient received. And then the official note had some differences or some things that were omitted. A patient had some concerns with the encounter as procedures of a bilateral heel injection were performed with ultrasound. Patient relates that she never had an ultrasound used. She had some concerns regarding the chief concern. And some of these were changed with the formal view of the signed document. Looking at the official record from 9/14, patient did present with some heel pain. Patient was requesting another injection, and it was noted that the patient had seen a previous DPM prior, was happy with the care, switched due to insurance reasons. There is a focused lower extremity examination. Pain is recorded to both heels. There is a mention that I noted of a tuning fork eliciting some pain out of proportion. Doctor was concerned regarding a stress fracture. There is some problems with the notes regarding laterality as to which side was the issue. In the physical examination, there's no mention of a nail pathology as for a reason for doing a biopsy, but there is a procedure portion of the note that does say that the nail is a biopsy. Again, I'm not sure which side. Again, there's a laterality issue, and it appeared that there was only a nail trimming that was done as opposed to a formal biopsy with a Novocaine blockage and such like that. There is an extensive plan of care, which seems to be templates, a long list of some conservative options for the heel pain. There's a view of the tarsal tunnel. EMG was discussed, MRI was discussed, surgical options were discussed, many different things in the plan of attack there. When reviewing the financials, it appears that everything is actually underbilled for what is documented that was done. It's documented that two injections were done, one was only billed, there's no billing for the biopsy, and the patient was a new patient but billed as a established patient already. So my review of everything, I have trouble using templates. I think a lot of us still do it in our podiatry profession. I think we need to be careful. I think that caused the root of this problem, as it led to some of the potential inaccuracies. In the notes, you know, there's templates here in this particular case that in the pre-encounter for an encounter preview, ultrasound injection was used, NSAIDs were provided, even though this patient had GERD. So there was a very extensive plan of care. I'm uncertain if that entire plan of care was well communicated to the patient, as everything documented. But it is still in the documentation. There is mention.
Dr. Saunders? Dr. Saunders?
Oh, okay.
Buzzer sound? Is there a buzzer sound people here?
I can hear buzzer sound. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, so is everybody back? Dr. Foreman, Dr. Ilano, and Dr. Saunders, are you all there?
Yes,
Dr. Ilano.
Okay, because things went out, Dr. Saunders, and we kind of lost you. I believe the last part you were talking about ultrasound.
Sure, let me... I'll go back to my conclusion here. Dr. Clark was using some templates initially that I think led to the some of the problems here with the previous note, the encounter preview. And I think at times we sometimes will have trouble going back and forth and making those corrections. You know, on the encounter preview, it said that he used ultrasound for the injections, where he did change the note where he did not use an ultrasound on this case. Anti-inflammatories were prescribed, even though the patient had GERD. There's a very long, expensive plan of care that was supposed to be communicated to the patient, but the patient did not confirm this. Maybe they don't remember. There's mention of a stress fracture. There's discussion regarding tarsal tunnel, yet the plan of the care that was communicated to the patient doesn't necessarily correlate to this extensive laundry list of differential diagnosis. The patient itself clearly did not have the same experience that she had with the previous DTM. I don't think that Dr. Clark's care falls below the standard of care. I do have some concerns regarding the templates. I think that opens up Pandora's box for trouble and poor documentation. As certain things may be said that they're done and they weren't, and vice versa. I discussed with the patient that I don't think it's fair to compare one experience in the doctor's office to another in this particular case. And then also, as conclusion, a biopsy was done with an in-house office. There was no appropriate billing. There was no billing that was inappropriate there. I do question whether or not a biopsy is actually done versus a nail trimming. I think there's a difference between the two procedures. It's probably moot at this point for this particular case.
Dr. Saunders, did you ask Dr. Clark why he mentions the stress fracture but doesn't follow through with any kind of immobilization or anything like that? Did you ask him about that?
Yeah, I think it was mentioned at one point that he considers ordering an MRI and it just wasn't done.
Yeah. Okay, but and he doesn't mention where the stress fracture is in the notes, correct?
I believe he was just kind of, from my interpretation of it, a stress fracture could be likely. I think it was to the heel or implied to the heel.
So he was just, maybe this was part of what his differential was then.
Yeah, as a physician looking at this, I think this was a template that was used, and it was just kind of checking boxes.
Yeah, well, and I definitely agree with you on that. That you know, this having something called an encounter preview and then a finalized note that certainly does not gives an appearance, that's kind of lends for a negative inference that here we're going to present something and then we can go ahead and change things, and it makes, you know, obviously a chance for a lot of documentation and communication issues to occur. So Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders?
No, I don't.
I got a question for Dr. Saunders. Dr. Saunders, when the patient was given the official note versus the unofficial note, was the unofficial note signed?
Yeah, no. It was not electronically signed. And I don't believe that the patient has received the official signed note yet. I encouraged her to get so. I don't know if that's been done.
Okay. And the official note, in your opinion, is satisfactory?
I do. I think the medical record is complete. Again, my issue is, as with most of us, some of the templates used are not necessarily completely indicative of what was actually done. And that's part of, I think, the system. But I think the note's complete. The care is appropriate.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Dr. Clark, are you there? Should be. Number up there. Dr. Clark?
Yes, I'm here. Yes,
oh, okay.
I'm here.
So, Dr. Clark, please, you would give a summary.
Yeah, when she checked out, she received an encounter preview, which was a template that was pulled in for the encounter. It was not signed yet. It's included being from the documentation. And so when I had the time to go back, changes the...
Dr. Clark, I need to interrupt you. I'm sorry. We're having a very hard time hearing you. If you could just speak slowly and try to enunciate, because something with your connection is making it very difficult.
And if I'm, Dr. Campbell, since I'm present and it may be easier to hear me, I'd be happy to provide the summary, and then Dr. Clark could answer any questions that you may have.
Okay, why don't we do that, Dr. Clark? Since your counsel is present, she can give a summary, and then we'll then be able to ask you questions. That might make it easier. Thank you.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Campbell, members of the board. Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing with and on behalf of Dr. Clark. I will just touch on a few high points. Everyone has read the materials, has heard Dr. Saunders' comments and conclusions that the care was appropriate and did not fall below the standard of care, and that the final note that was actually signed contained all of the necessary information. We understand, obviously, the issues with EMR, and Dr. Clark certainly isn't the only person who uses templates or auto-populated or things or shortcuts or something like that. The issue is that the staff provided the patient with the unfinal encounter preview, and we understand how that could be confusing to the patient since there was some inaccurate and incomplete information in there. Since that time, Dr. Clark has spoken with the staff about not releasing an encounter preview and just telling the patient that if they're leaving at that point in time, that the note that they'd be happy to provide them with a copy of the visit note as soon as it is reviewed and available by the physician. She was provided with some handouts regarding plantar fasciitis and some other information as well. That is what she should have been given, and she should have obviously just been told the final note was not available, and this would have avoided this situation. So Dr. Clark has instructed his staff in that regard. Obviously, when he did finalize the official note, all of those issues were corrected. To my knowledge, the patient did not actually request a copy of the final note. While it's unfortunate that she felt like she had a bad experience or a different experience than she did with her prior provider, the care provided was reasonable and appropriate, as was the documentation, and we would ask that the complaint be dismissed with no action. Dr. Clark, again, is here by phone, and pending audio issues, he'd be happy to answer any questions that any members of the board may have. Thank you.
Dr. Clark, this is Dr. Campbell. When you were talking about possibility of a stress fracture, were you speaking of the heel or somewhere else?
I was thinking of the heel. And this is kind of in the differential diagnosis for when someone has heel pain. And so that's something that, you know, put it in the note as a thought process for the future. But, I mean, you know, the MRI and things are usually obviously something that I would order after an x-ray. And also there's something care. So that's not necessarily any follow up on it because the patient didn't follow up in the month.
You know, I your counsel just mentioned that this is in regards to the documentation and the EMR system that the staff was presented the encounter preview, and then you have now told your staff not to release that, which I'm glad that you have taken that action, because this goes back to issues that you've been here at this board before, and you've been through, you know, CMAs regarding communication and documentation. So again, I will state, I think that puts you in a very bad position to have encounter previews and then finalized notes, because it gives an appearance of possibility of record alteration. And that is, you know, and obviously Dr. Saunders expressed this concern too. So I would ask, does Dr. Foreman have any questions, or Dr. Ulano have any questions for Dr. Clark at this time?
I do have a question. In your EMR, you should have a portal that the patient can sign in for. You should be able to put up their note that they can download it at any time when you're completed with the note. Do you have that functionality in your system?
We do. And when people, you know, come to the office, they're encouraged to sign up for that portal. You know, really with this patient, it was just a matter of she was demanding a note at checkout. She wasn't willing to wait to get into the portal to get the official copy of the note. And we didn't know that these preview encounters were even able to be printed. And so this made us aware that, hey, this is possible to happen. So now the staff knows that, you know, they can't be printing the notes before they are formally signed. So yes, she would have had that opportunity to sign up for the portal, and apparently chose not to, at least not to my knowledge.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Ulano.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Ulano. So let me do this a little bit. So when the patients come in, you sort of do a preview of their note and just got our note. Is that correct?
So in the system, when a note is started, when you close out of the chart to, you know, work, go to the next patient, anything that you have pulled in, so any templates or blueprints that you have pulled in prior to signing the note will show up in this encounter preview. But there's no signature on the note yet or any indication that the note is finalized. It's merely just a preview of what has been pulled into the note so far, but not finalized.
Okay. And then at a later time, you're able to fix the note and finalize the note.
Correct. So, you know, in the documentation that was provided, you can see that the encounter preview, there's no signature anywhere. There's no indication that it's final. And then when the note is signed, on the left-hand side of the finalized note is where it has the actual doctor's signature and shows that it's, you know, signed and final. So,
okay. Generally, how long does it take you to finalize the note?
I would finalize a clinic encounter either the same day or, you know, within 24 hours, so either that evening or the next morning is normal. There are times where, you know, if one gets left in the queue, it may not be finalized for a week or so, but my you know, routine would be to try to finalize them same day if possible.
Sure. I'm just happy that you fixed that, giving him the unofficial note versus the official note. And it's normal to take notes and finish your encounter the same day. We get busy and practice. No further questions.
Thank you, Dr. Ulano. All right. Well, I think we could all agree that there is no violation of standard of care, but I am still concerned with, you know, like I said, we've had CMEs and everything before regarding documentation and communication, but I will make a motion to offer a letter of concern regarding the use of the encounter preview and the finalized note as it can present to those reviewing issues impropriety or a negative inference on the action of the doctor. Do I have a second? Dr. Ilana or Dr. Foreman, would you offer a second?
I found that that unofficial note, I mean, there could be discrepancies between the two, but I think that finalized note should be the one that we should concentrate on.
I agree, and I think it was just an office mistake. And they print out the letter a little bit too quickly, the note.
We're not in discussion. I need a second, and then we can discuss. Gentlemen? It does, you know, we have to have a second if we're going to discuss, and then we vote, and it may go, it may not go. So that's the procedure.
All right, I'll second it.
Thank you. Okay, now let's have discussion. You were saying.
Personally, I don't feel this is indicative of a letter of concern because I think it was a front office miscue that Dr. Clark has since fixed. I would say I would recommend that Dr. Clark tell his patients they have to sign up for the portal and download any future communications via the portal.
Dr. Ilana, did you have any remarks?
Sure. I also feel this is an office mistake and it's been fixed. Oftentimes, you get busy in the office and you need to make notes before you finalize it. And, I see no violation or letter of concern needed.
Well, I will make one more comment and regarding your opinions, and I do believe there was an office error. That's true, and like I said, I'm glad that Dr. Clark spoke with his staff. He is the captain of the ship there, so he needs to be aware of what they're doing. So I would also say that I would be inclined to just reminding Dr. Clark to be careful with these things because it does not make a good appearance in front of this board to see these issues time and time again. So we need to take a vote on this. So Dr. Ilana?
What is it proposed again, Dr. Campbell?
I didn't get that, Dr. Ilana. Say that again slowly.
Yeah, what did you propose for Dr. Clark? A letter of concern or...
Yeah, that's what the motion is, and we've all, you know, made our opinions known, and so now you either vote for the letter of concern or you vote against it.
I vote against it. I don't think it's it was just the opposite.
Okay, and Dr. Foreman.
I also vote against it.
And I vote for. Motion has died. So then that just goes, do we need to make a motion then to dismiss? Okay. So I will then now offer a motion to dismiss case 21-22-C, finding no violation of state statute. Do I have a second? Thank you. Any discussion?
Second.
You all in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay. Our next. Next case. Dr. Gary Friedlander, 21-16-C, Council is present.
Mr. Crawford. And our investigator is Dr. Farah Honey. So we will first hear Dr. Farah Honey's report.
Hi there, my name is Dr. Farah Honey. I'm an investigator for complaint number 21-16-C, licensee Dr. Gary Friedlander. Date of this investigation was 01-04-2022. Here's a brief summary of the allegations. SB was referred to Dr. Friedlander by Dr. Rossetti of Honor Health. After initial visits, he needed to go to the urgent care about a swollen and painful right foot. He stated that he had an x-ray and made an appointment with Dr. Friedlander to have him look at his foot. Dr. Friedlander ordered an MRI, which was done on 7/30/2021. He said he would review it and call him. He did not. He claims he left 5 to 6 messages for him since and has not responded since. He claims he's still swollen and in pain. He's trying to get his record sent to a new referral podiatrist, Dr. Fishko. The allegations is number 12, failing and refusing to make patients' records available to a physician or another podiatrist within 21 days after request and receipt of proper authorization. There was a Dr. Friedland responded through counsel, Mr. Bruce Crawford, and in his letter, he responds to the complaint. Mr. Scott Bangford was initially, well, I guess I got to use SB, was initially seen in the office on April 27, 2021. He was concerned about his left hallux nail. A diagnosis of onychomycosis was made and treatment options were discussed. He returned to the office on May 25, 2021 for a total matricectomy. He returned again to the office on July 22, 2021 for re-evaluation of the matricectomy and now had a new concern with his right foot. The matricectomy site of the left hallux had completely healed. He was very happy with the results and progress he had made. Concerning his right foot, he had developed right heel pain approximately 2 weeks prior without any history of trauma and has never experienced similar symptoms. He noticed swelling about the foot and ankle. The pain was with weight bearing and relieved with rest. He was seen in Honor Health urgent care. X-rays were taken and he was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis. He was placed in a cam walk and placed on diclofenac. He had improved considerably but continued to have swelling. Dr. Friedlander states that his exam revealed 1 out of 4 pitting edema of the right foot and ankle. No edema noted on the left foot and ankle. There was no pain on palpation along the calf and no palpable cords noted. The right foot and ankle was warm as compared to the left. There was no pain over the PT, plantar fascia, Achilles, or the peroneals. The range of motion of the forefoot, midfoot, rear foot, and ankle was without limitation or pain. X-ray from urgent care were reviewed, revealing plantar and posterior calcaneal spur. Dr. Friedlander goes on to explain that he was on vacation out of the office and out of state from July 30th, 2021 through August 8th of 2021. On August 3rd, Dr. Friedlander was informed by the office assistant, Mary Johnson, that the MRI result had been scanned into patient's chart. After reviewing the MRI results, finding nothing that was acute and would have changed the treatment course and being on vacation, the patient was to be scheduled for an MRI review and further evaluation when Dr. Friedlander had returned from vacation. Dr. Friedlander reports that he returned from vacation on August the 9th. The patient had scheduled a follow-up appointment on August the 10th. Dr. Friedlander states that he had a message from his staff that the patient wanted him to call the patient on August 13th. Dr. Friedlander returned patient's call, but he did not hear. He has left several messages and a phone call. He also left his cell phone number. He never heard back. And he also goes on by saying that to date, the office has not received any requests for medical records from either Scott or SB or Dr. Fischko. And I reviewed the timeline of events on 4/27/2021. The patient had left hallux nail removed 17 years ago. It was regrown to form, difficulty cutting it. And at that point, Dr. Friedland recommended total metrosectomy on 5/25. The total metrosectomy of the left hallux was done. The patient was set to return in 2 weeks. On 7/22, a reevaluation of the metrosectomy, left hallux, no pain. Patient was happy with the progress. 2 weeks prior, the patient had a new complaint that his right heel pain. He experienced no trauma, never experienced any similar symptoms. He was seen at Honor Health, diagnosed with plantar fasciitis, was placed in a cam walker and the diclofenac, doing better, and but he still continues to have swelling. Dr. Friedlander went ahead and ordered labs for renal profile and reported to continue with the cam walker and finish the prescription for diclofenac, and he was set to return in 10 days. On 7/28/2021, patient shared that there was no improvement. So Dr. Friedlander did a ultrasound. There was a well-encapsulated soft tissue mass with extensive hypoechoic signaling noted. Mass is over the EHL tendon. Mass extended to dorsal venous arch. Going lateral, proximal mass measures 2.2 by 8.3 millimeters. At that time, he recommended an MRI shared for the patient to remain in the cam boot. And he suggested that he would contact the patient with the MRI results. Discussed the patient to evaluate it with his PCP for his renal failure. On 7/30/2021, there was a letter by Marie Johnson, one of Dr. Friedlander's staff. SB called for his MRI results. Told patient. Patient Dr. Friedlander was on vacation. If results needed immediate attention, he would let office know. On 8/3, Marie Johnson letter, again, report came in. It was scanned. She let Dr. Friedlander know that the patient would like the results. On 8/6, patient called for results. Dr. Friedlander asked Dr. Withrow to go over the results with the patient and schedule a follow-up. Patient was displeased that Dr. Friedlander didn't call him with the results immediately. He made an appointment for 8/10/2021. The complaints interview, the same concerns. Patient was unhappy that Dr. Friedlander did not call him. He reports that he had 5 to 6 messages left, and he claims that he is trying to get his records to send to a new referral podiatrist, Dr. Fischko. I reviewed the entire file provided by Dr. Friedlander and further reviewed concerns provided by SB accordingly. I believe in doing so, patient was initially seen on 4/27, unrelated to the complaint. He was pleased with the level of care, and on 7/22, stated that heel pain with recent diagnosis of plantar fasciitis and was seen by Honor Health and was seen by Dr. Friedlander. Dr. Friedlander was out of the office from 7/30/2021 to 8/8/2021. His staff communicated with the patient that Dr. Friedlander intervened by having a covering physician discuss results with the patient. The MRI report was not available until 8/3/2021. In my opinion, I find it completely unreasonable for the patient to not want to make a follow-up appointment and would be adamant to receive results via phone call. Reviewing results of diagnostic testing where it requires detailed review of the imaging by the physician is not an acceptable method. of patient-physician relationship, in my opinion. The physician was on vacation. He had sufficient coverage. The covered DPM answered patients' questions, followed standard care. With that said, the MRI result didn't change really the course of the current treatment. It doesn't appear that any request for medical records was formally done as per protocol by the patient, nor any records release were submitted by Dr. Fischko's office on his behalf. So I found the alleged allegations to be unsubstantiated. If I'm present for any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Farahani. Yes, I agree with your recommendations and what you found. And yeah, it's people, this is instant microwave society that thinks they're going to have results the same day they have a test. It seems to be rampant out there. Anyway, we do not have... Dr. Yolano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Farahani?
Good morning, Dr. Farahani. You know, in regards to formalizing the notes, in your opinion, what would formalize the notes for a patient to ask for?
I'm sorry, Dr. Yolano. I barely got anything you said. So can you speak a little slower?
Sure. Formalizing the notes, the patient needed to formalize the notes. What would be needed to formalize the notes for the patient?
I don't think it was anything to do with formalize or finalizing a note. I think the notes were actually done appropriately. The problem is that the patient claims that they had requested for medical records. However, there is a protocol with every office. You need to request such records and for it to be sent to a particular place, and none of these requests were present. I actually reached out to Dr. Fischko's office, and they had never ever sent a request for any records for on behalf of this patient. So
okay, that's what I was getting at, if there was a request for the records being formalized. And the patient never executed it. Thank you.
Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions?
Yes, so the response back with the results for the MRI was in an appropriate time frame for the patient after receiving the results, in your opinion?
Yes, sir, because the results didn't really come in until 8:03, and I mean, Dr. Friedlander or any physician out there has a right to be on vacation as long as he has appropriate coverage. He covered all those ends. He had his Dr. Withrow go over the results for the patient. I mean, I really don't see what the urgency would be with a phone call, and they offered to make an appointment, and the patient didn't even show up to the appointment. So it's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. So I believe that all standard of care, all the protocol were followed by Dr. Friedlander and his staff.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Friedlander would have contacted his office was in contact with him. And if he saw something that was out of the ordinary, he would have addressed it. So... Dr. Friedlander, you're still on the phone. If you'd like to make some remarks, and I know your counsel is here, if Mr. Crawford would.
Yeah, just a couple. I'm actually looking at the MRI report. It wasn't even dictated by the radiologist until August 3.
Yeah.
So, I mean, talk about unreasonable expectations. I mean, obviously, you know the protocol. If the radiologist had found something urgent or emergent, they would have called, and they didn't. And so, you know, Dr. Friedlander had an appropriate person respond within 3 days. That's not unreasonable. You're absolutely right. We're in a society now that people are putting unreasonable expectations on doctors. This is not again, it's not a finding that required any urgent or emergent treatment. That's a different circumstance. So it's unfortunate we're dealing with board complaints over a three-day response time to a non-urgent study like this. So Dr. Friedlander didn't do anything wrong at all.
Oh, I know, but we wanted to give him the opportunity to make a remark if he'd like.
Right. And I was just going to say, as I usually do, I say a few first, and then, you know, if you have any questions of Dr. Friedlander, he's available and happy to answer your questions.
I don't have any questions. Dr. Friedlander, do you want to make a remark?
No, I think I have to agree with the doctor's findings, and I feel that everything was done appropriately. That's about it.
Yolano or Dr. Foreman, any other remarks? Okay, well, then I'll go ahead and make a motion to dismiss case 21-16-C, seeing no violation of state statutes.
Seconded.
Thank you.
Seconded.
Discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. All right. Thank you very much. Next case is Dr. April Blessinger, case number 21-19-C. Counsel is Mr. Crawford, who is present. So, this also, the investigator on this is Dr. Saunders. So, if Dr. Saunders would proceed with his investigation report.
Okay, yes, I'm back here. Complaint number 2119C. This is a complaint by ED. And this complaint kind of falls under the umbrella of a personal relationship that has gone sour. The complaint here is that there was also a delay in some medical records receiving them. ED relates that his insurance was being billed for visits that didn't occur, and he has some concerns of sharing his private information to other individuals, a.k.a. friends, in the personal relationship. He does admit at one point that he has a personal relationship prior to becoming a patient. He acknowledges that he does not have any proof of personal communications with other friends or persons outside of the office. He does say that he did now receive the medical records that he once requested. In reviewing the chart, there is clinical encounters that are obvious that the patient was seen on the said occurrence of 8/5/20. There is a full note. It's complete. There's a plan of care summary, including some injection therapy that was done. There is proof of orthotics being ordered where the patient released it. The patient is saying that he did not see them. In reviewing some of the text messages, it's obvious that the orthotics were fabricated and dispensed. Amongst the medical records of review, there is some supporting evidence of a legal order of protection against ED by the doctor. There's supporting paperwork of ongoing harassment from the complainant. In a communication to the doctor, there was no real written formal request for medical records as to a date. It was universally acknowledged that the patient ED did communicate via email for the medical records, requesting them. There were some staffing issues acknowledged from the doctor. It is uncertain as to what time or when that email was actually opened, when it was actually sent. I don't have that timeline there. The billing information is reviewed. It appears to be financially correct. Everything's appropriate there. To summarize this, I believe that the patient was evaluated professionally. The patient was billed appropriately. and the medical record situation has been taken care of in an appropriate manner. It's difficult to determine the actual dates and signed request and when it was actually received, but I believe that it was within a standard time period. There was no direct communication. The patient did not arrive in the office and sign a formal consent for the medical release. And it's always difficult to determine when they're actually opened. I don't know if all email is opened immediately, especially when there's a revolving door with staff and staffing issues secondary to COVID. There was a personal relationship. This obviously went sour. I don't know if this is a legitimate concern or continuing harassment. The patient is saying he wasn't seeing when he obviously was. Orthotics were fabricated. I see no breach in standard of care. I think ethically, doctor conducted herself appropriately.
Thanks, Dr. Saunders. I don't have any questions, but I would note too that in a situation of having an order of protection, we really, as a board, have no jurisdiction over that issue. That's not civil, but of course, it was part of the whole picture of this case. So Dr. Ulano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Dr. Saunders on this case before we speak to Dr. Glessinger?
I don't. Thank you, Dr.
Saunders. No questions, please.
Oh, thank you. Dr. Glessinger, do you have any remarks you'd like to make, or would you prefer to defer that to your counsel, Mr. Crawford?
Yes, thank you. I'll defer that to counsel.
Well, this is really unfortunate. This is, I'm sorry to say it, but this is really a revenge complaint because a relationship went south. So the orthotics issue, they clearly were dispensed. And follow-up on it was there was communication. There's no zero evidence of sharing personal information with anybody. You know, the medical records issue, there was a little bit of a delay, but there was not a proper request for records. And it was, the records were sent. So, you know, unfortunately, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of us are dealing with staffing issues in this climate. There was not an unreasonable delay. So, you know, it's unfortunate, again, that we're seeing complaints like this, but it should be dismissed.
There was, and obviously, there were no continuity of care issues for something emergent. So, Dr. Ulano or Dr. Foreman, do you have any questions for Mr. Crawford?
No.
I would just make one remark, to Dr. Glessinger. Just remember, you know, the importance of getting written, signed medical records releases. It really is something important in your practice. So, there are no other concerns. I would make a motion to dispense of dismissing complaint 21-19-C, seeing that there are no violations of state statute.
Seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Very good. Thank you very much.
Nice to see everyone.
All right. Our next case is 21-10-C, Dr. Zachary Flynn. Investigator is Dr. Conlon Farhoney, and we do have the complainant present we weren't expecting, so we will, and remember, let me grab her MS or her initials, so we remember to refer to her by her initials. So at this time, I will ask Dr. Farhoney to give us his report.
Hi, this is the investigation report for complaint 21-10-C against licensee Dr. Zachary Flynn. Here's an overview of the summary of allegations. On June of 2019, Dr. Flynn performed surgery on The right foot of the patient with plates and to repair a ruptured tendon on the second toe. Undergone several surgeries due to the damage this caused. The night post-surgery, patient claimed that went to the ED because she was in so much pain. Did not see Dr. Phil until a week later. Patient stated that he neglected to send her to a modern vascular. She sent photos to Tanya, which works for Dr. Flynn. Dr. Flynn reviewed pics and felt it was good and not infected. Patient stated that green pus was coming out. She felt neglected. The daughter accompanied her to Banner, and they referred her to wound care at that time. During that visit at Banner, the patient saw Dr. Dillon at Banner Wound Care Center, received wound care for approximately 1 month, and then she was referred to Dr. Abraham and was referred to modern vascular then. She received two procedures on the right leg with the vascular service. Her foot looked deformed and her toe, the joint is dislocated. She states that she went in because of pain, ball on the bottom of her right foot that caused her a great deal of pain, and she reports that it's still present. And now she's currently seeing Dr. Jen. I summarized as best as I could the allegations. Number one was failing to obtain a written informed consent from a patient before a licensee performs any surgical procedure. Number two, committing gross malpractice, repeated malpractice, or any malpractice resulting in possible death of a patient. And three, committing any conduct or practice that is might be harmful or dangerous to the health of the patient. The licensee's written response comes with a letter. He's representing himself. This is his directed response to the complaint that the patient stated above. Dr. Flynn states that he was a surgeon of record and treating physician for this patient and performed a Lapidus bunionectomy and a second digit hammer toe correction with the plantar plate reconstruction. During the postoperative period, the patient experienced swelling as well as localized epidermal necrosis and delayed surgical incision healing. It was during this postoperative recovery where the patient was not amendable to his recommendations treatment plan. Patient was adamant on having an infection. As medical records show, she received all appropriate intraoperative antibiotics prophylaxis as well as postoperative prophylaxis as per his standard protocol. And as to the standard care, she was evaluated in the office at standard postoperative intervals and localized wound care was performed and recommendation for care. He states that when she was not pleased with her progress and her concern for infection, she was seen and evaluated not only by myself, but multiple other physicians whom she sued opinions from. And Dr. Flynn goes on, says, at no point to his knowledge did she have a laboratory value confirmed postoperative infection, nor did she require hospitalization for postoperative infection. During the recovery postoperatively, the patient did miss appointments as she was unsatisfied with the care that were provided to her. During this time, she sued other medical opinions and received treatment from multiple physicians, as stated in her complaint. He further states that he cannot comment on the care that was provided to her outside of his practice. And at his last visit, all surgical incisions were healed, reduction of all deformities were appreciated, and confirmed via a radiograph. She was still having some discomfort with ambulation to the ball of her feet or foot. At that point, Dr. Flynn recommended further conservative care with CT or CAT scan to assess the fusion, physical therapy, scar creams, compression hose. After that visit, she was lost to follow-up. Also stated in the complaint is a reference to her contracting arterial disease as well as having a venous ablation procedures. The medical necessity and need for these procedures in regard to her foot would best be described by the treating physician at the time, as well as the vascular specialist performing said procedures. Dr. Flynn goes on saying, at no point to his knowledge did she have a deep-seated infection that needed require hospitalization, require IV antibiotic therapy, or required hardware removal. He states, unfortunately, at the time of last assessment, that the surgery did not resolve for pain and symptomology. As we know, this is a possibility with any surgery that we perform, and was clearly explained to the patient and documented in the medical records. It was also acknowledged on surgical consent forms. Actually, it was also acknowledged on surgical consent forms. Based on the complaint, the patient was not happy with the care that was provided by Dr. Flynn. He states that the standard care was followed on his end. All issues and complaints from the patient were treated in a reasonable manner with conservative management. He further states that he recommended a CAT scan to assess the healing. She completed the CAT scan but did not follow up for any further visits or management from Dr. Flynn's standpoint. I'm going to go over some series of timelines here. On 5/23/2019, bilateral foot pain, right more than the left, right lapidus fusion, second plantar plate repair, and Taylor's bunionectomy. Office for surgical treatment options, pain present for 2 years. She was previously evaluated by a different surgeon, and the patient did not like the care that she had received. Dr. Flynn discussed lapidus bunionectomy fusion, second hammer toe correction, possible while osteotomy, plantar plate reconstruction with flexor tendon transfer. Dr. Flynn discussed with patient surgery recovery 6 weeks with walking boot followed by 8 weeks of PT and transition to shoe gear. Estimate will return in shoe between 8 to 10 weeks. Dr. Flynn discussed DVT and risk and benefits, prescribed SCDs, and x-rays were reviewed and placed in the chart. Approximately 2 months later, on 7/2/2019, the first post-op visit, the pain recorded by the patient was 9 out of 10. She had mild nausea. X-ray showed to patient, they discussed 9 weight-bearing ice, elevate, ACE wrap applied, and the patient was to return to clinic in 1 week. 7 days later, on 7/9/2019, this is her 3 weeks post-op, right lapidus fusion, second plantar plate repair, and Taylor's bunionectomy. She discussed increase in pain, which is mild, persistent swelling and discomfort, discussed with patient ice and elevation, refill a pain medication. They discussed initial PT 2 times a week, times 8 weeks for soft tissue desensitization and progression strength training, and the patient was to be reevaluated in 1 month. On 8/12, about approximately 7 weeks post-op, dull persistent pain and swelling. She stated that she had returned to work recently. Dr. Flynn reported well coapted skin edges. Skin incisions are still healing with great progress. Swelling, he had put quote unquote significant noted. Localized wound care at this time. Compression stockings was discussed. Cleared to return to work 30 hours per week times 6 hours a day, and the follow-up was to be on 6 weeks. On 10/7/2019, right foot post-op, the patient continued with the swelling. The patient complains of paresthesia and difficulty ambulation. No infection, the skin edges were coapted. Skin incision has healed, and moderate foot swelling was still present. The x-ray was taken, she was healing, no disruption and or malalignment was noted, pain noted to the plantar aspect of the second metatarsal head, which is impacting her ambulation. At that point, Dr. Flynn recommended CT. Patient had a DVT and Dr. Flynn wanted records from Modern Vascular. Patient currently on aspirin, prescription for repeat PT for scar, adhesion and swelling was ordered. I went ahead and looked at modern vascular notes on 9/19/2019, referred by Dr. Abraham for right PAD. Patient shared with the Walker NP, incision was not healing. Dr. Flynn did not assist her, so she went to Banner Hospital. Antibiotics were given and referral to wound care was done. She received treatment for approximately 1.5 months, 1.5 months, and then they referred her to Dr. Abraham. And 9/30/2019, they did the right lower extremity angio. On 3/17/2020, left lower extremity angio, lateral plantar artery stenosis, and plantar loop balloons performed. I reviewed Dr. Abraham's notes. The patient was seen from period of 9/12 to 5/12 of 2020. She had diagnosed CRPS, PAD, and she had at that point requested for the patient to get a second opinion with Dr. Harlan, which I believe is her partner at the practice. The last two appointments with Dr. Flynn was on 8/12/2019 and 10/7/2019. But it appears that the patient was seen on 10/17 of 2019 with Dr. Abraham. It appears that the patient had already started seeing Dr. Abraham for another opinion after her last visit with Dr. Flynn, which was dated to 8/12 of 2019. I reviewed Dr. Harlan's notes on 8/31/2020, second opinion sent by Dr. Abraham. Diagnosis was PAD CRPS, and that stands for complex regional pain syndrome. 6/17/2020, Dr. Harlan stated non-surgical, discussed with patient swelling and soreness may be present after surgery for approximately 12 to 18 months. Patient was seen by Dr. Dillon at Banner as per notes from Dr. Abraham at first visit with Dr. Abraham 9/12/2019. She stated that incisions are healed and no sign of infection was noted at that time. I've already overviewed in complaint interview, same as her allegations. I reviewed the entire file provided by Dr. Flynn and further reviewed concern provided by MS accordingly. In doing so, patient was initially seen on 5/23/2019 for right more than left foot pain. It was concluded that the patient would be a candidate for right lapidus fusion, second plantar plate repair, and Taylor's bunionectomy. The statements pertaining to lack of care by Dr. Friend is the main surrounding purpose of this complaint. Patient states that Dr. Flynn failed to intervene when photos of her foot were sent to Dr. Flynn rather than states of no infection. Sometimes between 8/12/2019, the appointment with Dr. Flynn, and first appointment with Dr. Abraham, which is approximately a month later, 9/12/2019, patient opted to be seen by Dr. Dillon at Banner for wound care. On 9/12, Dr. Abraham stated in her notes that there was no open wound evident to the patient's right foot, which is the surgical site. This was then confirmed on 10/7/2019, last appointment with Dr. Flynn as well. Furthermore, I concluded through medical review that the last two appointments, again, with Dr. Flynn was 8/12 and 10/7. But it appears that the patient had seen Dr. Abraham at 10/17/2019, and it goes on without saying that the patient had already sought an opinion after her 8/12/2019 visit with Dr. Flynn. Failure to refer to consult with vascular as shared by MS with overview of medical review, I don't believe the necessity was there. It appeared that the patient was seen by wound care between 8/12 to 9/12/2019 and went on to healing. Patient did eventually see vascular with dates noted on 9/30/2019 for a right lower extremity angio and 3/17/2020 left lower extremity angio, lateral plantar artery stenosis, and plantar loop balloon. I have presented all the facts set forth. I have reviewed more than 200 pages in medical records. I am not able to conclude as whether that concern brought by MS is valid or invalid. I do believe that the patient received the appropriate care, and risk and benefits of such procedure were discussed with the patient prior to surgery, and patient consented to the procedure. Patient did go for consult willingly. Complications, I believe, do arise from procedures from time to time, and the goal of such is to manage such issues appropriately. With that said, I do believe that Dr. Flynn followed all steps appropriately, and I find those allegations unsubstantiated.
Thank you, Dr. Farahani. I do have some questions, Dr. Farahani. I did not find an op report or a consent form in the medical record. No diagram showing the patient what was to be done. And so that is a concern to me, that those were not apparent in the records. Also, the quality of x-rays that we received on our packets is horrible. Did you have the same experience?
Yes, I did. With that said, I think there was some issues with the x-ray quality and so forth and so on. I think it was outside of Dr. Flynn's ability to do that. I did not see a consent in the file, but I also know that there is no way that you can go to have surgery at any appropriate surgery center or a hospital without signing a consent.
That is correct. But most people too have a consent form.
Correct.
In their medical record. Also, I couldn't find an op report. Could you find an op report?
Okay. I did not.
So, seeing that, what I did ask Heather to re-subpoena those records, because I think we need those before we can truly proceed. I mean, obviously, you had questions and things that you felt like you couldn't give a true answer on. But I think, so I had asked Heather to do that because they have, I know he worked for that Steward
yep.
Orthopedics, and then they have a secondary group called ShareCare.
Yeah, but the problem with that, that's what I was just going to, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I think he had a very, very difficult time trying to retrieve any records because he's no longer employed by Steward, and so his ability to be able to retrieve any records is next to nothing, and I believe Heather attempted to do that. Me and her worked on it, and it's like pulling teeth trying to get things from Stuart. So in fact, most of the medical records that Stuart provided, the dates were all around. One was there, and then I had to put them all together. So,
well, like I said, Heather has re-subpoenaed them, so... Would you? Oh, Heather will make the remark. I shouldn't be.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Board members. I've not. I know that you and I have discussed it, but I was waiting for the board to make a determination. So I've not actually sent the subpoena. No, it's okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. And I have a question, real quick. I on our request to speak, initials are MG, not MS. I apologize. So we'll make sure we correct in our record that it's MG, not MS. All right.
It was MS. I'm sorry. I went through a divorce. Now I went back to my maiden name.
So should it be MS or MG?
Garcia, MG. Oh. I'm sorry, MG.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
On my files, it's MS.
Oh, all righty. So Dr. Yolano, Dr. Foreman, do you have questions for Dr. Farahani?
I had a question about the op report and consent forms also.
Okay. Dr. Yolano?
No question.
Okay, thanks. Okay, well, Dr. Flynn is not present, but we do have the complainant here, MG, so I will now ask her to summarize her care and complaint.
I just need to his report. A lot of things that were said on Dr. Flynn's behalf is incorrect. I did send pictures to Dr. Flynn, which I think probably violates my HIPAA Act by sending pictures through a phone, which I didn't know, but this is what Tanya, his assistant, had requested. My daughter has it on a recording and let her know that she was being recorded when she stated back. I have the pictures here stating that Dr. Flynn looked at the pictures and he stated that the pictures looked really well, that the foot was healing and there was no infection. My daughter was not happy with that, so she took me to Banner Emergency. They referred me to the wound care specialist. When I received there, Dr. Dillon brought in a specialist, a podiatrist specialist, and they were astonished by the way my foot looked, and he was very angry. He says that this should have never happened. He says your foot is very infected. I had to get patches of antibiotics. They had to compress the foot. This was never, Dr. Flynn never requested this. He was surprised. The only reason I went back to Dr. Flynn was because I was told that if I didn't go back, then my insurance might not cover it because I had a last appointment with him. So I went back to Dr. Flynn. I mentioned to him, and he kept apologizing to me, saying he's sorry. He doesn't know why my toe still looks the way it does. Actually, the day I went for my first week for my appointment, I had my sister and my brother with me, and when they unwrapped my foot, he was surprised to see it. He kept asking me, what happened to your toe? And my brother responded, you're the surgeon. And he goes, I know, but the toe just doesn't look right. And my brother goes, once again, you were the surgeon. So they would not even touch my foot to remove the stitches because they said it. She looked. She goes, I don't want to even touch it, she said, Dr. Flynn, because it looks so angry. He couldn't express why, what was going on with the foot. He had no concern to call me. They never called me in to see my foot. So I went to Dr. Dillon. They performed all the compression and all that. Then I had to go to Dr. Abraham, and they were the ones that requested I go to Modern Vascular, which I contacted. I've been very healthy all my life, very active. This has slowed me down tremendously. My foot was infected. I contacted arterial disease. They had to cauterize my vein. And while I was in that vein specialist office, when they were talking about that, they brought in a Dr. Jensen. She's also a podiatrist. She was really just pleased with my foot, and she is the one that said, maybe I need to come here because this was not right. I was neglected. So upon seeing her, then I did proceed with all this because I'm not good with all this stuff. I just knew I was in a lot of pain. I'm still suffering. My foot, I can't walk barefooted. Dr. Harden told me, did Dr. Flynn tell you that your joint is broken? And I said, no, that is probably why I'm in so much pain. My joint is broken. It's dislocated. I don't know if you could see that in some of the x-rays. But they recommended nobody wants to really touch it. It's so bad that if all the problems I had, it could lead to amputation, which is scary. So now I'm told I have to live with this. When I went to Dr. Flynn and I explained to him that last appointment I had, this hurts. What I came in for the first place was not corrected. I still have that bottom pain. I can't walk on it. When he went to put in the plate, my insurance I trusted him. My insurance denied the plate at first, and then he went in and called him, and he argued the fact, and they finally agreed to let him put the plate in, which now I'm wondering, was it necessary to put the plate in when my insurance didn't want to cover it? And finally, I don't know what he argued the fact. I don't know what he told them, but they went ahead and did it. It is a regret I live with the rest of my life because they can't correct my foot. I can't wear. Dr. Flynn had promised me, oh, don't get rid of any more of your shoes because I promise you you're going to be able to walk like you used to and wear your shoes. No, that is not true. I have to buy shoes that are big for me. I have to put memory foam in them. My toe, if you could see my toe, it is still underneath my two other toes, my big toe and my third toe. I still have a lot of burning in the foot. I am right now currently seeing a Dr. Mona Mehta for nerves. She's gonna put me on some kind of medication, which I haven't picked up yet, for my nerves. I don't like being on medication. I'm more of an herbal person. Like I said, this surgery has totally changed my life. And if you would see the pictures, you could honestly see that there was infection. I mean, it was horrible, and it's still horrible. And for them to dismiss this, I don't think it's fair. I really don't think it's fair. I was neglected. He never called me back. Never. Never asked me to come in. What he's stating is not true. I had signed off a consent form with Dr. Jensen for my records. They submitted it a couple of times and never got any response. I tried calling. They couldn't even find my records. Isn't that odd that they can't find my records? They don't just disappear. Dr. Flynn knows that there is something wrong, and they don't want to admit to it, and they should. Like I said, I have to live with this the rest of my life, and it's very painful still. I'm not as active as I used to be. I get on my treadmill and I walk, and I have to stop because the pain gets to be really bad on the bottom of my foot. My leg does not feel normal. It feels like I don't know how to explain it. It feels like it's hollow. It feels like it's wood. It doesn't feel normal. And for Dr. Flynn to sit there and say that this is okay, I'm sorry. I don't agree. He's not living this pain every day. And to question why my toe looks the way it does, like my brother said, you were the surgeon. And it's never been corrected. Everywhere I go, tell me that scar should have never, they avoid all that. I have this ugly scar on my foot, several scars. When I went to therapy, Travis, the guy at therapy, told me, I can't work with this foot. It's infected. It's so bad. So we had to stop therapy for a while. And then when I was able to go back, I seen a patient there that had just had the same type of surgery 6 weeks, and I was going into 8 weeks or longer. And his foot he had a line and little dots from the staples, and that was it. He looked at my foot and he said, oh my God, what happened to your foot? And we had the same exact surgery. And he was walking wearing his shoe. I was not able to wear my shoe to work. I had to go to work because, actually, I'm single. I have a mortgage. I had to go to work with my foot in bandage and crutches for a long time. It was hard for me to drive. I have a truck. I have to drive my truck. I finally had to find a shoe that looks like it's a surgical shoe to be able to walk and to be able to drive myself to work. Because I don't have anybody to support me but myself. I have medical bills. I still have medical bills. I have collections coming after me because I only make so much an hour. I'm sorry.
This is what we do. We listen to everybody's. Have to have information to know what is going on. I have some questions for you, if you don't mind. Prior to having this surgery, did you ever have any vascular problems?
No. I've never had any problems.
Veins or phlebitis or
all my records, I've never had any problems with my veins.
Were you ever a smoker?
No.
I don't know how old you are, but I will ask this question. Any use of oral contraceptives during that time?
No, I've had a hysterectomy many years ago.
Did you ever have, in the past, other surgeries where somebody said you have chronic regional pain syndrome? I mean, so with your leg and foot, was it ever cool, shiny, like you said, it felt like wood.
It feels very, yes. And I can't, I'm now going because I have restless leg syndromes. I can't sleep at night. So when I'm at work, I literally fall asleep at work because I'm so tired, because my legs keep me up. They keep me up. I have to get up sometimes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I have to get up sometimes and get on the treadmill to get my legs going, to stop.
Now, is the neurologist, that you said you were having some burning in your feet, is the neurologist also directing care toward the restless leg syndrome?
Yes, she's. I just went to see her Monday. Monday. Her name is Mona Mehta, M-E-H-T-A. She's requiring MRI. She, like I said, she put me on a medication. I'm not big on taking medicines, but I can't live with the restless leg syndrome. I'm at work and I can't. I have to get up and I have to walk around, and I walk around, and it's horrible. It's very horrible.
Did you sign a surgical consent form in the office before the surgery, and did he present you with any diagrams or drawings showing you what he was going to be doing?
No, he talked to me. He talked to me about it, and he did. I should have stayed, but our insurance changed over. I was seeing a Ryan Scott, and all he wanted to do was fix the toe. When I went in to Dr. Flynn, he had made a remark saying, "Oh, that's Dr. Scott." He never explains the whole procedures. So now I need to tell you that in order to fix the toe, I have to put this plate in. Well, Dr. Ryan Scott never, and even when I went to see Dr. Dillon, and he brought that specialist in, they were kind of concerned why I had to get the plate. Everybody, my insurance didn't even want to cover it. I don't know what he convinced them of. I trusted him.
I have questions. So did you sign a consent form in the office, and did he present you a diagram showing what he would do?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay, that's all right. Do you have any history of diabetes or ever had a stroke? Restless leg. And that you've had some veins now cauterized. This is kind of a... were you going through your divorce at this time? So if you were like on very emotional, high alert reaction.
My divorce happened after. It wasn't an ugly divorce.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't an ugly divorce. We were very good about it. Both of us agreed. And there was no argument, no fighting over it. We just wanted to go our own separate ways.
That could have affected your health, too, having your people going through a lot of...
Yeah, no, it was...
Okay,
it was,
I'm sorry to have... You know,
no, it's
that
okay.
Just
no,
is a per-
it, it was,
felt,
I was very... Yeah, we were both...
Okay, good.
Very,
okay. Thank you for being here and presenting everything. I'm going to ask my other board members if they have questions for you. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilana, do you have questions for the complainant, MG?
Yes. What did Dr. Flynn do postoperatively when he saw the foot looking the way it did? Did he have you put any antibiotic ointment on it, or what did he have you do?
He never treated the wounds. When I went in, I called him when I went in for a week, and I told him my first week's appointment. My brother had, and my sister was there. I told him, I think my foot's infected. It's not healing. And he said, well, let's give it one more week. So I suffered another week without him giving me anything. Finally, I called in and I told him, this is too painful. So then finally he prescribed an antibiotic. I finished the antibiotic. It was a strong one. And then I called him and I told him the first couple of days it felt like it was helping, but now it's back to the way it was before. It's not healing. Never once asked me to come in. And finally, like I said, my daughter seen it, and it looked like antifreeze coming out of my foot, and she was upset. She goes, no, I'm taking you to the emergency. That's when they looked at it, and they said, you need to go to wound care. If it wasn't for Dr. Dillon, I mean, he was excellent. He was very upset. He says, I don't have a problem speaking on your behalf because this is horrible. So they did. They treated my foot, and they bandaged it. I had to go in twice a week, and they put antibiotic strips or things on it, and I had to work like this. I had to go to work like this.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Back to Yolano.
When, did you experience doing that wound before you went to Dr. Dillon? Any signs of an infection, like you had any fevers, chills, or besides, I know you had pain. Besides that, did you have any other symptoms?
Did you have any fever, chills, or any symptoms prior to going to see Dr. Dillon?
Yes. That's why my daughter...
Did you...
I'm sorry. That's why my daughter, because I told her I wasn't feeling well, and she came and picked me up, and she was going to actually just take me in to see Dr.
Do you have any other questions, Dr. Yolano? Dr. Yolano, are you there?
I didn't hear her last few sentences. There was a buzzing on the phone. Could she repeat that, please? Sorry.
What she said was that she wasn't feeling well. And she had sent the pictures to Dr. Flynn, and he's like, well, these look okay. And she said he wasn't showing any concern. So her daughter had looked at her foot and said, I'm taking you to the emergency department. And she has, yeah, and then she presented the photos that she has with her were in our, you saw those in our packet. So.
Yeah.
So okay. That's where she met Dr. Dillon. Am I correct?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No further questions.
Thank you. All right. So we have some options here. Since Dr. Flynn is not here, and I'm sure I have questions, and I'm sure you gentlemen do also. And the fact that the records are not complete, I think we all need to be able to see those. These have x-rays that are readable to evaluate what the foot looked like, you know, structurally as far as with concern as to was a Lapidus a necessary surgery or, you know, was it, you know, toe would have been appropriately done. The fact that we don't have a consent to look at or diagrams, so... I'll direct Heather to re-subpoena those, and it may take a while, who knows. I mean, you know, records are important. We can't do a thorough evaluation of this until we see those, and also we need to talk to the doctor. So we can continue this investigation to get these records we need and have Dr. Farahani review those and kind of give a supplemental report. Or we can move it to an informal interview. But that's a little bit, you know, we could do that, you know, when we get these other information. And then, but request with the continuance of the investigation that Dr. Flynn be present at the meeting. Because we have questions. And if that doesn't happen, then I would move it to an informal. So if you gentlemen are in agreement, I will just ask again Heather to subpoena and hopefully secure the records that we need to continue investigation and request that when this is scheduled, that Dr. Flynn be present. Does that need to be in a motion, Seamus, or can I just...
make a motion.
Okay, so did you have something you wanted to say, Dr. Foreman?
Yeah, could we be very specific and say the operative report and clearly visible x-rays and the consent forms?
Yes.
In this opinion?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, be as specific as, yeah, that's, yeah. Heather, Dr. Farhani has a comment.
I also think while we're doing it, we might as well just subpoena Dr. Dillon's notes as well, because I would like to know what type of wound this was. And whether, you know, no offense to the patient, obviously, if we're going to get all of our heads wrapped around, I would like to see Dr. Dillon's notes as well for the duration of that month of wound care. So,
excellent suggestion, Dr. Farahani. That's true. Like I said, if we're going to do our due diligence and have a complete evaluation. So, Dr. Foreman or Dr. Yolanda, is there anything else you'd like to see?
Yeah, I would strongly suggest that the doctor be present at the next meeting.
Yeah.
If you can also put that in there, that's a question.
Okay, so then I will go ahead and make a motion to direct our executive director, Heather Broaddus, to subpoena the records that are missing. Those would be readable x-rays, consent forms, operative reports, Dr. Dillon's records of wound care at Banner? Is that where he, Banner?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think Dr. Dillon's last name is D-H-I.
L-L-O-N?
Yeah.
Any additions to that motion? Okay, so that's a motion. Everybody's up on that. Okay, so did you just second for me? Thank you so much. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
So moved. So, ma'am, Heather will keep you in the loop.
Now, looking at these photos, I have a burn here that is unexplainable.
Could you have the dates on those? Because they weren't dated. Is there some way? I do not recall seeing dates on your photos.
These photos were taken, actually my daughter took these, I believe, when we were at the waiting room of the wound care specialist.
Okay.
If she has them, does she still have them on her phone?
I'd have to ask her.
If you ask, there may be a timestamp. Help us out as well. So
there are slices on here that I'm kind of concerned about.
Yeah.
There's just these huge slices on there. I personally feel like he just tore open my foot with no compassion. I don't know.
I know it's difficult for you, and I mean this is our job is to evaluate this and see what happened so that issues can be properly addressed. So thanks for your time. We appreciate you being here. So we're all set with moving on, and we've got everything, and we'll get information. Okay, great. And if you have any questions, Heather is at the board office. You guys okay? You want a break or should we just plow on? We do have one more.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We do have one more complaint. Pardon me. All right. Our next complaint is 21-27-C as Mark Rosales. Dr. Rosales, are you on the phone? Dr. Rosales? You might have put it on mute.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi there.
Yep. Hi. Sorry, I had to unmute.
Mark, do you want to go by Mark Anthony? You want to go by Tony? Are you going by Mark? What's
Tony's son?
Tony, okay.
Mark is my legal name, and that's where my license is, so that's the way I look at it.
Farahani is here. The complainant is not present, so.
Is that my phone or your phone?
I think the buzzing comes from us, so it takes a couple of seconds for it to go away, Dr. Rosales.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, this is a complaint number 21-27-C, licensee Dr. Mark Rosales. This is a summary of allegations. Patient was sent to Dr. Rosales by PCP Dr. Holston for foot pain. Initial visit was 8-12-2021. Patient claims that he was charged $105. There was a punch biopsy on both legs, peri ankles to check for nerve damage. Dr. Rosales discussed insoles. Patient claims that that he discussed with Dr. Rosales about being on Social Security disability income and have financial difficulty. His second visit was on 9-29-2021. His copay was $75, he says. Called Blue Cross Blue Shield and had concern about the specialist copay and was told that his copay was $75. Patient states he was overcharged at initial visit of 8-12 of 2021. He was charged $105 versus $75 copay. Discussed with results of punch biopsy at this visit. Dr. Rosales deemed appropriate for three prescriptions to a specialty pharmacy. And the patient stated that the price for one was $94 and the others were $164 per prescription. The specialty pharmacy didn't take the insurance, called and attempted to have medication sent to a different pharmacy. The patient claimed that discussed with DMA at Dr. Rosales' office that the patient is on SSDI, which is Social Security Disability Income, and unable to pay at this time. And the MA suggested filling only one out of the three prescriptions, and Dr. Rosales uses only this specialty pharmacy. The MA name is Tyson, or was Tyson. Patient called Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they had suggested that there are three pharmacies that would make the medication covered with insurance. Patient states that when they called the office, they told the patient that would send a refund in form of a check, and patient claims that he never got the check. Dr. Rosales provides us with a letter dated to December 6th of 2021. I saw the patient on 8-12-2021 for evaluation of his neuropathy, gout, and heel pain. He was with his wife/girlfriend at the time. She was clearly highly medicated and non-comprehendable. We performed a couple of biopsies of his lower legs to evaluate the small epidermal nerves and made him a follow-up visit for 2 weeks. At the time, Dr. Rosales recommended that he sees his general practitioner in Page, Arizona for pain management of his neuropathy. In my medical opinion, said by Dr. Rosales, they were seeking drugs or pain management, both of which I do not provide, and I explained this to him and his wife and girlfriend very professionally. On his second visit on 9-29, they reviewed the results of the biopsy, which were consistent with neuropathy. They also addressed painful mass in the arch, heel pain, and general foot pain. He had an ultrasound to assess the mass, his plantar fascia, and heel. He did not want to be casted for orthotics or have a series of injections, but alluded to pain management. Again, Dr. Rosales recommended that he follow up with his primary care physician in Page, Arizona. He also recommended and gave him a handout on dorsal column nerve stimulator that is performed by a PMNR specialist. He was given a number of on the handout of someone to contact here there in Flagstaff. Dr. Rosales recommended pain management with topical and nutritional supplement, which have worked well for many of the patients in our office who suffer from neuropathy. He seems very content when he left the office. He did not have his girlfriend or wife with him on that particular visit. The patient's wife, girlfriend, called the office on the patient's behalf and spoke with Tyson. And about her husband slash boyfriend, she explained to her she was not allowed to discuss this and her because there was not a release of medical information consent on file. She spoke to me about this and we were on the same page. I explained to Tyson that we're not to discuss any of the medical treatments with her unless we had a release of medical information on file signed by the patient. This was not up for discussion as it is against the law. If the patient would like to discuss this, I would speak with him personally, or he can come in his regular scheduled appointment. And further on, Dr. Rosal states, apparently the wife girlfriend is upset and filed a board complaint because they do not approve of the way that he practices medicine. I reviewed some of the timelines on 9/29 of 2021. Dr. Rosales reviewed the path result for a punch biopsy. On 8/12/2021, the patient was seen by Dr. Rosales for burning, tingling, numbness, bilateral feet. Patient had stated that he's had this pain or similar symptoms for around 15 years. He had a previous history of gout, right heel pain, and he presented with the fiance. That's what the note said. Patient did not recall last HbA1c recommendation for biopsy, 10 centimeters proximal to the lateral malleolus bilaterally, and was instructed to follow up 2 weeks for the results. Right heel pain, possible injection were discussed, and they discussed with the patient to discuss neuropathy with general practitioner. On 9/29, Dr. Rosales reviewed the path result from the punch biopsy, discussed findings, and he discussed and wrote a prescription for three compounding medication, I believe, that was sent to a specialty pharmacy that Dr. Rosales often uses. The complaint interview, again, I discussed this with the patient, and the main complaint surrounds why they were charged $105 initially, and also I believe that when they called the I believe when they called the Blue Cross Blue Shield, they told them that there is a pharmacy that covers these medications, and the patient, whether the patient was told appropriately or not, the patient called Dr. Rosales' office and requested for this prescription to be sent to a different pharmacy, which I understand that Dr. Rosales uses this particular specialty pharmacy. In any event, and she also, again, they also expressed that the Dr. Rosales' office had told them that they would be sending a refund, the difference between the $75 and the $105. In my records review, I did see some ABN that was, you know, signed by the patient in case that there is no coverage by the insurance company, and so that the patient would be fully responsible for these payments and so forth and so on. In my investigative report, MH was referred to Dr. Rosales by PCP for foot pain after initial visit biopsy was performed, and second visit, the result of such studies were discussed with the patient. Dr. Rosales sent three medications to a specialty compounding pharmacy. The insurance did not cover any of the medication required for an out-of-pocket expense. Patient and fiancé called the insurance. Insurance gave referrals of three pharmacies that would sew such compounding and would cover under patient's insurance. The MA nor Dr. Rosales attempt to resolve the issue. It is further understood that such medication that were initially sent to the specialty pharmacy of choice by Dr. Rosales may not contain the same ingredients provided by the pharmacy suggested by the patient's insurance. I believe that this could have been done at the request of the patient, even though fully understanding that the pharmacies that were suggested by the insurance company may not contain the same ingredients that Dr. Rosales often uses. I don't really believe that the patient was questioning how Dr. Rosales should run his practice, as he wrote in his supplemental. I believe, in my opinion, again, this is my opinion and no offense to any of my colleagues, it is a duty of a practitioner to facilitate the patient in such events by trying to at least finding an alternative medication or a pharmacy. And I see this quite often, and I believe that some of these could have been prevented by just a simple communication between the actual physician and the patient rather than through another party. I think Dr. Rosales, with all due respect, should have contacted the patient to facilitate the issue. Furthermore, the discussion and the assumption of drug-seeking behavior by the patient, I think, is a null, because none of the medications that Dr. Rosales actually prescribed to the patient are not oral pain medications, and they're merely just topical medications from a compounding pharmacy. So I had wrote that those allegations would be substantiated just because the amount, what the patient says and what was said by Dr. Rosales regarding the difference of the copay charge and so forth and so on. And then also, I think Dr. Rosales and his staff should have at least tried to facilitate the patient in such an event to find an alternative medication or pharmacy. I did see a supplemental after I provided my investigation report to Heather that Dr. Rosales thought that I discounted certain things and certain documentation. Again, this is no offense. I'm just seeing as they come in, and I investigate what is provided to me, and I truly believe that a communication by Dr. Rosales to this patient would have prevented many things. So this is my end of my report.
Dr. Farahani, I will make some comments on that. I understand, you know, that your viewpoint of what you're investigating, but you know, in regards to the use of the pharmacies, you know, and the doctor is the captain of the ship. What they're ordering is what they want for their patient to use, because they've had the best success with those treatments. You know, if somebody has, say we were dispensing or we're writing a prescription for a hypertensive, antihypertensive medication, and the patient's insurance does not cover it, it does behoove the physician to select an alternative, unless the patient cannot tolerate a generic or whatever and they need a brand, and the doctor should fight for that patient. But here we're prescribing a non-oral medication that has a certain protocol to what is in that, and then saying, well, if you go to another pharmacy, they might take things in or add, you know, that if they don't have a component, then they're not getting what they need, and the care could be substandard. I also feel that it's also the patient's responsibility to know their insurance and what pharmacies are covered. So that's just, you know, part of my two cents there is I think, you know, it can go both ways. I don't think there's, you know, that he can, that there's any infraction to a state statute that he didn't, you know, wasn't involved more directly with helping a patient get a medication, particularly because he did sign the ABN forms too. So that's just how my opinion that I see there. Now, one of my questions too here about having the girlfriend coming or slash wife who seems to be in an altered state at the appointments. I think Dr. Rosales was, you know, he's protecting his license and not, you know, and being aware of patients and wanting to protect himself against drug-seeking, possible drug-seeking behavior. You are, no, we weren't there. We didn't see. So I would also be lenient on that, that, you know, we weren't there, and he was doing what he felt was necessary, you know, making comment that this is how he perceived this. This is what happened in his perception of what was going on that day. As far as the, I know he charged $105. Now, you look at the EOB that came back from that data service, and the copay is $75. I agree. I don't. We can ask Dr. Rosales why the charge of $105 was made, because if you look at the EOB, there is no deductible taken from that. Yet there's a note in the chart that the patient signed showing a deductible amount of $792.50. So maybe they don't remove deductibles from certain portions of bills. And we don't have the next bill to look at that was from the second, that when Dr. Rosales made his remarks back that on the 9/29/21 visit was not, they hadn't received it yet. So we can see there. So I would say, you know, if there was that charge of $105 and the copay is only $75, yeah, that should be reimbursed, particularly if a deductible's been met. But we're not seeing deductible on an EOB. So again, like I said, those are some good, I think, some questions that hopefully Dr. Rosales can answer for us. So. Dr. Ulana or Dr. Foreman, do you have any remarks or questions for Dr. Farahani?
Dr. Farahani, have you tried ever to send over a topical medication to one of the pharmacies that they say covers? Because they make up their own formula, and it's never what you want. And I understand. I mean, I do think we need to send it over to a different pharmacy, but they do change what is in the mixture to have insurance coverage.
Dr. Foreman, I had already in my report I had written that yes, I understand that those ingredients may be manipulated or not be the same as what the physician would write, but I look at it being on the other side of the table, saying that okay, well, if you make an attempt to try to keep a patient happy, then you prevent a complaint. That's what I think. So if we would have been able to do something, even though saying, hey, you know what, I can write this for you, but I don't think it's the same thing, but it would prevent a complaint. That's all I'm saying. So no disrespect again.
Dr. Ulana?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Farahani. In regards to the the pharmacy, did he ever send it to a second pharmacy to know what was going to be in the ingredients or not?
No, there was no alternate pharmacy the medication was sent to.
Okay. And then, we don't have the records of the deductible was taken out from that the overpayment.
Dr. Ulana, the EOB shows on that first visit that no deductible was removed from the office visit or the other charges for that day, which was a the 11104 right and the 11105 left. So those were, they didn't have copays, just the office visit had a copay, and there was nothing in the deductible column. Yet there was that, I'm sure you saw that other, there was a, I believe it was on page 1564, it shows patient has a deductible amount of $792.50. Yeah. So this is, like I said, what we have to ask Dr. find out from Dr. Rosales, and also if he has what came back on the visit of 9/29/21, because he didn't have it then.
Okay. No further questions for Dr. Pauline. Thank you.
Dr. Rosales.
Yes, ma'am.
So please give your summary.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Oh, please, you know, just summarize your case. And, you know, you've heard the discussion, so, and questions we've had from of Dr. Farahani's report. So if you could comment on, you know, those particulars also.
Okay, sure. So I saw Mr. Holt for an appointment. He had multiple things going on. I tried to do the best that I could to address all of those things because I knew that he was traveling from out of town, you know, 100 plus miles away. I tried to do the best of my ability when he was here and give him some alternative forms of treatment because he's been dealing with this neuropathy pain mainly for a long period of time. I tried to offer him injections to help alleviate the pain he was having in his arch, which he deferred. As far as his, you know, copay and that, I mean, we know he has the deductible, and that's from Blue Cross. So, you know, why the girls charge him $105 or why we charge him $105 at his initial visit was probably to cover for his office visit and probably the x-rays that he was going to have, knowing that he's still going to owe probably additional money for any additional procedures that would be done in the office, but we know that he has a deductible that's unmet, and he didn't say at the time that he was on disability or have any disability paperwork with him, so we didn't know about that until after his second visit when he requested that. He did come in with I'm sure it was his girlfriend, I don't think it was his wife at the time, and she was, you know, not in her right state of mind, you know, and after speaking with the patient, yes, that's what I came to the conclusion was that, you know, they may be looking for other forms of pain management, which I don't do in the office. I tried to talk to him about, you know, a dorsal column nerve stimulator and refer him to a pain management specialist or a physical medicine rehabilitation person that would address those issues. You know, it's very cordial and very professional, and he seemed to understand that. And, you know, things seemed to go well. You know, the second visit, he had some more questions about, you know, pain management, kind of going down the same path that we had previously discussed. And, you know, yeah, I wrote him a prescription through a compounding pharmacy that I like to use because they make a good product and they put what they say is supposed to be in there, and there's nobody else in town that makes that. I don't care what Blue Cross says because we've tried all that, and if I knew that there was an alternative that would help somebody with a complicated case of neuropathy such that he has, I would be more than happy to do that for him. But, you know, the P10X has a lot of different things in there, which nobody else in town makes. The CBD topical that I gave to him, I mean, that's the, in my opinion, that's the best stuff that he could have. They're not going to give that to him at Walgreens. The N6 maybe is the only other oral pill that I would feel comfortable giving him, and it's a nutritional supplement. And I told him, you know, this may be beneficial, but you're going to have to take it for a long period of time. But your best option is to go see the pain management specialist if you want pain management control. And the dorsal column nerve stimulator is the only way that I know to give you any type of relief because he's on a lot of different medications, and I'm not going to put him on any other oral medications beyond my scope of practice. So, you know, I did the best that I could while he was here. He seemed happy when he left. And the fact that he had his girlfriend call on his behalf, that's just not legal. Maybe I'm not familiar with the law enough, but I thought that was against the law for someone to call and get medical information about someone that doesn't have a medical release on file. So whether I called him back or not, I mean, he didn't call. And, you know, I tried to answer all his questions, and I talked to my medical assistants who were overstaffed in the office. We had plenty of help to communicate that with them, so really there's no reason for me to speak with him, in my opinion. And if he wanted another appointment, I'll be happy to give that to him, but it just seemed like that's the line that he was going down, and I tried to just reiterate that on both visits. And I'm not a pain management specialist. This is the best option, in my opinion, for you to have to use the topical from the pharmacies that I gave you, because otherwise you're going to spend hours on the phone with the insurance trying to verify something that we've already done. We know that they're not going to cover that. We know that there's no one else in town that will give him anything that's close. So it's not like he just started having neuropathy and he's not already highly medicated. So, you know, if this is not going to work, then he needs professional pain management. So, you know, I try to do the best of it, you know, that we can with all our patients and treat them to the best of our ability, using the whole staff as a conduit to relay that information. And that's all I have to say. I mean, we never told the patient, you know, as far as the payment goes, we never told the patient that we would send them a refund check. What we tell them is if for some reason you know, you pay your copay and what insurance is not going to pay for the other procedures that may be done on that visit, if there's an overpayment, we will send you a check back. But given the fact that his deductible was, you know, $792, you know, it's very, very unlikely that she's coming back for repeat visits and having additional procedures. So I don't think I have anything else to add. I do have Kim here, my biller, and she can explain or further explain that it will be to you if you would like.
Well, Dr. Rosales, do you have your process claim from 9/20/2021 that shows, did anything go to deductible then? Because on your other visit, where the charge was 105 and the copay was 75, it shows that there's no deductible taken from that or the other two procedures. So, and at the time you sent in your information, you hadn't received this claim yet. So do you have that?
Yes, I'm going to have Kim here as the biller, and she's going to try to find that for you.
So for the date of service 8/12, the EOB did not post anything to deductible.
Correct.
Which was, you know, we got the information from the Blue Cross Blue Shield portal about that deductible. We were just trying to save on big bills. However, the next date of service, the 9/29, I had to rebill it repeatedly, and we finally got some payment on 12/3/21. That's, you know, 2 months and a few days after being billed, which is unusual for Blue Cross Blue Shield. It also did not apply any deductible. However, it did say that the foot strapping on the left foot wasn't a covered benefit. And there's a signed ABN on file from this September 29th that says the foot and ankle strapping would be written down to $35. Patient signed that on 9/29/21. So that additional $30 that was taken the initial visit was applied to that $35.
Okay. That's what we needed to know.
Okay.
And of course, the patient, you know, probably, I don't know if that was explained to them, but yeah, the communication, I don't know if they weren't, you know, of course we weren't there, but I mean, that was what my questions were, is if they weren't removing from deductible, but if, yeah, since the strapping was a non-covered expense and he signed the ABN form, then he's responsible for that. So then what's, there's like a $5 difference or something, or what was it, 100, you know, so. So that's copacetic. Has the patient called back about anything money-wise? Or had this explained to them?
not that I'm aware of. We tried to explain that, you know, on their initial visit, but I can certainly have Kim reach out to him and give him a call and try to further explain it. I don't know that he'll understand. But.
Yeah, okay. Now, and because, you know, one thing I noted about this individual was he changed his PCP because his other PCP was on vacation. So, I mean, you know, there's some other things going on here. So, I'm sorry, I didn't. Dr. Foreman or Dr. Ilano, do you have any questions for Dr. Rosales and his office staff?
No, I don't.
Dr. Rosales, I've got a question. Did you attempt to send that formulation to another pharmacy in the area and found out that not all the ingredients were covered in the specific case?
For this particular case, no, I haven't reached out because I just know from calling on other people's behalf, and I've been using this place for, I don't know, probably a year and a half, that there's no one else covers it. There's another compounding pharmacy in town that'll add some other things that are maybe comparable, but it's not covered by insurance. It's just another loophole for us to jump through. So Wadham's pharmacy in Columbus, but it's not, you know, something Walgreens or Fry's or Walmart or anything like that is going to cover.
Besides this specialty pharmacy, do you prescribe to other specialty pharmacies?
No, because I don't get the results. The only other place in town is Wadham's pharmacy. We probably use four other specialty pharmacies in years past, and patients don't seem to respond to the stuff that they're given. So this seems to be a good pharmacy. It's all-encompassing. It's professional. They mail the product to the patient right away. And then we get good results. Patients come in and they say, you know, this stuff really helps me. And they're not, I don't pressure them to get it. I tell them, you know, this is something that you may try. If you don't like it, stop using it, you know. But for the P10X, I mean, I wrote them three prescriptions, the P10X, and that has the diclofenac, baclofen, bupivacaine, cyclobenzaprine, gabapentin, ibuprofen, ketamine. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. You know, and, you know, the CBD, I wrote them for that. And then I wrote them for a nutritional N6, which has the L-methylfolate, the methylcarboxamine, pyridoxifosphate, and the lipolipoic acid. Is there a pharmacy that would cover that has a generic? Yeah, there probably is. A pharmacy that would cover that as a generic, that one particular component, but not the other topicals. And with all the issues that he was having, you know, I don't think that was going to address it. And that's why I wrote the topical compound components. I mean, if there's questions on the other pharmacies that you use, or that the board uses, or that the medical examiner uses that's beneficial, that's covered by insurance, I'd be happy to write that down and implement that in my practice.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions for Dr. Rosales? Well, we appreciate speaking with Dr. Rosales and Dr. Farahani. You know, we have our discussions, which is what we're supposed to be doing here. I just think, you know, it always brings up how important communication is. And we all, you know, that's something that we have to work on all the time is, you know, being a good communicator, listening, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a two-way street. You know, it's not just the doctor, it's the patients and stuff. So I will go ahead then and make a motion to dismiss case 21-27-CC, no violation of state statute.
Second.
seconded.
Thank you, Dr. Foreman. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Thank you for hanging in there, Dr. Rosales. Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, Dr. Farahani. Have a good day. Drive safely. Bye-bye. All right. So we're going to go back to 4, which is the review, discussion, and possible action on our meeting minutes from January 19th, the general session board meeting minutes. Does anyone have any additions or corrections on the minutes? Okay. Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept our minutes for general session of 1/19/22, seeing there are no additions or corrections. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So moved. Okay, then we'll move on to issuance of licenses. Subheading B under 5, we have 5 applications for licensure. Our first is Mary DeGroot. She is applying via comedy and has her letter showing her practice of the last 5 out of 7 years. All her paperwork is appropriate and paid. So does anybody have any concerns or questions for Heather on this license application? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept a completed application for licensure via comedy and issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next is Kelsey Efren. This is for regular license application. Doesn't have a DEA on here. She finishes her residency in June 30th of 22, so she'll be able to get it after that once she has a license. So did anybody have any questions or concerns on this application? So hearing none, I will make a motion to accept this application for regular license application and for an applicant who will finish a residency on 6/30 of 22, accept initial licensure application and issue this upon completion of her residency and payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. The next is Alan Cole. He showed a letter of employment. And his application is via comedy. Everything appears to be complete. Does anyone have any questions or concerns on this application? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept the application for licensure for the Dr. Via comedy and to issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Next is Mark Mondul. Also a application via comedy, practicing well over 36 years. Everything is complete. Does anyone have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept Dr. Mondul's application via comedy and issue the license upon payment of the issuance fee.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. Our next application is William Stamen. This is a regular license application. Everything is complete here. Anybody have any questions or concerns? Hearing none, I will make a motion to accept this application for regular licensure and issue the license upon payment of the license issuance fee.
Seconded.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So moved. All right. Then we were supposed to do this in January, but we didn't. So the next is elections for board president and board secretary. So we need to take care of that. Now, last time, we didn't vote on it, correct? Because we didn't have quorum, right? For last year, because we didn't vote it for a secretary. Is that what we, you remember, Heather?
Last year?
Yeah.
Last year, Rose was.
Oh, he was still that. He was the secretary. Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah.
And Madam Chair, board members, if I may, I believe it was when Mr. Rhodes put in his resignation and that the board had it on their agenda to vote in another secretary.
Okay. All righty. I'll nominate Dr. Well, we'll go to anybody, any nominations for board president? You guys want to?
I nominate Dr. Campbell.
Yeah, Dr. Campbell, I nominate you.
All right, so we have to vote. Okay, so it'll be a voice vote. So I abstain. So Dr. Ulano? Or no. Oh, I get. Oh, I have to vote for myself. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Ulano?
Aye.
So, okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I will go ahead and nominate for board secretary, Dr. Foreman.
Sounds good.
So,
seconded.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we'll go ahead and vote. Aye.
Aye.
Okay, done. Thank you very much. All right, next is Heather's Executive Director Report, number 7.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Update on the rules. The draft rules have been posted on the board's website for a public comment period. That period will close on March 6th. And then the next step is to submit those draft rules to the governor's office for final approval before they go to the governor's regulatory council. And I will keep the board apprised on the progress on that. In complaint number 2027C, the board issued a non-disciplinary order for continuing education at its November 10th, 2021 meeting. And on February 4th, the doctor, Dr. Olson, did complete those terms. So he was released from the non-disciplinary order. And I have not had any correspondence from the governor's office regarding a public board member. So again, I will continue to follow up with the governor's office on that and keep the board apprised. And I can answer any questions on the current budget. I can also answer any questions on the complaint log. And since I've sent board materials, no new complaints have been added to the complaint log. And that's my summary.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. That's great that we're really good, under good control with our complaint log. Excellent. Excellent. All right. Legislative update and discussion.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Since I last sent out board materials, some new bills have been introduced. So I'm going to only go through the ones that pertain to this board, if the board is okay with me doing that. So the first bill is Senate Bill 1052, and it states that a government entity or any person doing business in the state may not require a resident of the state to submit to a medical procedure, including a vaccination, if a potential complication from or adverse reaction to the medical procedure may cause the person's death. And it does define government entity in the bill. We have Senate Bill 1111, and that bill states that a health professional who is authorized to prescribe controlled substances and who is prescribing an opioid for short-term use for acute pain as part of a treatment in an emergency department or outpatient department of a healthcare institution is not required to obtain informed consent, and that goes for an administrator of a healthcare institution where opioids are ordered as well. The healthcare institution will be required to establish policies and procedures that outline when and by whom informed consent must be obtained when opioids are ordered for inpatient administration by the healthcare institution staff. Additionally, a healthcare professional is not required to conduct an opioid risk assessment before administering opioids to a patient in an inpatient setting. And then we have Senate Bill 1127, and this bill states that an agency may enter into an agreement with a cryptocurrency issuer to provide a new method of payment to people. We have Senate Bill 1162, and this bill allows a healthcare provider that is authorized to prescribe controlled substances more than 90 morphine milligram equivalents per day for an individual that has intractable pain or chronic intractable pain is receiving opioid treatment for perioperative surgical pain. And there are definitions in that bill as well. There's Senate Bill 1568, and this requires a health professional regulatory board to establish a non-disciplinary confidential program and to provide all licensees with the opportunity to participate in a non-disciplinary confidential program. It does require complainants to identify themselves in a complaint and make themselves available for an evidentiary interview, but they may request that their identity remain confidential, but only during the preliminary investigatory process. If the complaint were to continue on, then the identity of the complainant would be released to the respondent. The bill also requires that a complainant must be either submitted for board review or administratively dismissed within 180 days after the board receives the complaint. And it requires that the board provide the respondent of a complaint with a notice that the respondent has the right to be represented by counsel before interviewing the respondent and to allow the respondent at least 10 business days to retain that counsel. It also states that any complaint that pertains to a known or suspected physical injury, physical illness, substance use disorder, or mental illness that may impair the ability of a licensee or certificate holder to safely practice. In the health profession regulatory board requests or requires a fitness for duty evaluation by a board approved practitioner, the health professional regulatory board would pay those expenses. House Bill 2070 requires all public bodies to provide a reasonable amount of seating to accommodate the anticipated attendance. It also requires that the time that the public will have access to physical access to the meeting place be posted on the agenda, and there is a civil penalty if those provisions are violated. House Bill 2147 it requires that all state agencies add another statement to their application regarding the statement is, have you or a family member ever served in the military? House Bill 2162, it adds a section that a public body or a member of the public body that knowingly violates open meeting law, the court may require a member of that public body to attend training on public meetings as directed by the assistant or the Attorney General's office or the Attorney General's designee or the Ombudsman's office. House Bill 2371 requires that all state agencies accept cash or money orders as payment. House Bill 2412 requires a public body to post the minutes and the digital recording of the meeting on its website not later than 5 working days after the meeting. And House Bill 2599 states that a licensee that prevails in an appeal of an agency's final decision following a conference pursuant to Section 41-1092.08, subsection 1, is entitled to recover reasonable attorney fees and costs incurred during all stages of the proceeding. It's unclear whether or not the board pays those fees. I didn't see that in the bill. And that's my summary, and I can answer any questions. I'll continue to monitor these and provide updates, and if new bills are introduced, they'll be added as well.
Thank you, Heather. All right, next 9 is summary of current events. I don't believe we have anything under that category. 10 is our call to the public, and no public remains to have any statements from. Next is 11, any future agenda items that anybody has that they'd like to see placed on the agenda? In the future. So if you come up with anything, always please contact Heather about getting it on the agenda for discussion. Our next meeting is March the 9th, 2022, here in Boardroom C at 8:30. So have no other business on the agenda to attend to. At 11:08 a.m. on February 9, 2022, I move to adjourn the meeting.
Seconded.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So moved. Hey, guys, thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Have a great
day. Have a great day.
All this fun.